The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our Bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismelin of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Tyrion 14 of A Clash of Kings. And in our Raven, we will be discussing Jon Snow.
Something. We'll be discussing something. We haven't figured out our Raven yet. You know, this it's a short chapter.
Insert character name. We'll discuss it. Okay.
I'm actively searching right now because we are broadcasting here, guys. So I'm trying to find a message. We got a message and somebody from India. I mean, this is crazy, as we're talking global, you know,
international.
It's international. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're global. I'm going to try and find your name. My apologies. But I don't have it pulled up sooner. But he asked, or she, I don't know, the couldn't tell. Asked, hey, when's your guys' next episode? When's the next video? Well, I said, hey, we're recording Wednesday. Well, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Ez and I recorded on Sunday, and Ez said, and we said, oh yeah, we'll record Bend the Knee Wednesday. Well.
Yeah.
Tuesday night for me rolls around.
Yeah.
And I was like, and Ez is like, hey, are you ready to go? I was like, I thought we were doing Wednesday. Well, based upon the time difference, it was Wednesday for you, Ez. What is going on, man?
Oh, this is crazy. So if you get a chance, this might be a fun video version for you to go watch. I am holding my Hanes sock with cat hair. And it is hiding. And I'll show people this. If you would go check out the video, all right? Pull this down here. This is going to look pretty awkward.
There's the microphone. Remember, if you're a member of Patreon, you get video versions of all the podcasts.
Yeah. So, I'm in the kitchen and I'm traveling. So, this is international. We are taking the podcast international. I was traveling there in Costa Rica for a bit. Really no way to kind of continue the podcast there with internet and all that kind of stuff. But in Germany, we can do that. So I'm over in Germany. I'm actually podcasting from the kitchen, which is a great thing because I've been just turning around and like hitting the fridge. Like we're getting set up and I can just turn around. And that's the fridge right there. I've got nuts, chocolate. I've got some, you know, a little something to drink. I might get some fruit in a second. You just never know. I mean, so.
Yeah.
It's pretty radical, actually. It's a European thing to podcast from the kitchen. I don't know if you guys know that or not, but yeah. It's like, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
How is Germany, man? What's it like over there?
It's cool. I was in Potsdam, and I've been in, you know, Berlin, just kind of walking around, seeing all the different sites. Let's just say the buildings are, when you walk up to the, old. You see pictures, they're old. Yeah. And when you walk up to them and you think, oh, they're old and they look cool. And then you look up and you look straight, you're like right standing next to them. They're huge. They're not just like, the buildings are bigger than I thought they would be, I guess. I was right. just at the, I was like the Fountain of Neptune or whatever. I'll send you some pictures, dude. Well, first of all, he's jacked. He's ripped out of his freaking mind, this Neptune right. guy. And he's surrounded by a bunch of fish and turtles spitting water out of their mouths at him and a bunch of naked mermaids. So, okay. I mean, it was... I'm guessing that's something that, like, House Manderley would be into. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, hey, I found the Raven as the... this is from Zaire, and I clicked on his Facebook link. Says he's from India.
Yeah.
He says, guys, I'm waiting for your next video and also podcast. Please do a video about Mance. So I guess that's where we're going to talk about go. Mance Raider. We're talking a little bit about Mance. We'll talk about Mance Raider in the Raven. I said, can do. We are recording Wednesday, so a new episode will be out, you know, Thursday or Friday. Thursday. But I guess I should be careful because.
Right. It's Thursday, you know, for me right now.
it's Thursday for you. What time is it in India? That's even further over. It might right, be Friday. Yeah. It might be Saturday for all we know.
That's true. Yeah, we've lost track of time, my friend, true. Because, you know.
There's time bandits. As one other question, you know, this is something to think about. Mm-hmm. If two people are born in the world, mm-hmm. and you get toss out the idea of time zones, right? Mm-hmm. Just get time zones out of your mind. If two people are born, so if somebody is born in Germany where you're at, like, mm-hmm. you know, and somebody's born where I'm at in Portland, Oregon, at the exact same moment, they would have different birthdays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's just not right.
We need to fix that. We need to fix it. This is absolutely, it's.
That's just wrong.
Because one person, like the person who's born in, let's see, I guess it would be Germany, would be older than the person who was born in Portland, Oregon.
That's not right. That's
and I think
right.
that's discrimination.
Something's wrong.
That's age.
That's time discrimination.
That's time discrimination. That is absolute baloney. So because
somebody get Loki in here. All right, we got some variants going on. All right,
yeah.
Get Loki. Get somebody. Somebody needs to come fix this.
Oh my god, that's hilarious. That's wild. That's what we're dealing with here, folks.
Hey, so. As well, space and time.
Right, here we go. So, attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Houston. We have a pube problem? Wow. I am not making this up. This is from Manscaped. So, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants. What will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. That is the most awesome, most ridiculous script I have ever read, and I love right. that.
Well, hold on. I'm seeing this right here, man. It says first scheduled for liftoff, the new lawnmower 4.0 trimmer. The spaceship is here to guide you on a journey to trim your body, balls, butt, and even Uranus. Now, as the real question is does Jeff Bezos use this? I mean, that dude just went to space. His head's pretty scaped.
It sure is, and it should be. It should be. He needs to scape that head. Here's the thing. I wonder if he did. Has this been? I would say this has been tested in space. This is what they're saying. It might be. So I appreciate that. The weed whacker has been tested. The lawnmower has been tested. Who lawn mows? Yeah. Who does lawn mowing in space? I would. Friends of this podcast know I love to lawn mow. So I mean,
I've said it. Hey, man, I have said it once and I have said it again. They are the shears that guard the realms of men. Okay. Well, anyway, guys, remember, make sure to get 20% off free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com for a clean Trinity and beyond. Your Spaceballs will thank you. Wow. What a great movie, Spaceballs.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in
This isn't our hyperspace hangout podcast, but as we're already on the topic, guys, we have started to push out some of our content to the new Apple Premium podcast platform that we told you guys would be coming. And the cool thing there is you get Bend the Knee content, you get Heroes of the Horn content, and Hyperspace Hangout content, and the Matt Nez Show season 2 coming soon of that show. But anyway, you get our premium content that is also found on Patreon across the board. You can do that. And I believe it's like $4.99 a month or something like that. It's like,
yeah, for all of it.
Pretty mm-hmm. for all of it. You get the whole thing. Now you still got to come to Patreon if you want like the cool, you know, Bannerman hangouts and all that stuff. Maybe one day Apple will change it and you can have multiple tiers, but right now you will start getting all that extra content you also get on Patreon. So if that's easier for a lot of people to just do an Apple podcast and you want the whole thing, there you go. So all right, with all of that, is there any, I don't think there's any show news. You know, Comic-Con happened and we did not get Game of Thrones content.
Yeah, so we did not. Did I not see that George R. R. Martin is working on something else?
Well, as he's working on a lot of stuff, okay? I mean,
it's just one of those things. It's like, I feel like I could say that like 9 out of 10 weeks and it would be true that he's working on another project and not Winds of Winter. Is he still out in that cabin? Where is he? Where, you know, I mean, here we go. Okay, his most recent so not a blog, right? July 26, mm-hmm. new wild cards, original on tour.com. Yeah, this is nothing, I guess. He's just in here talking about some stuff that he's promoting from tour.com. Okay.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah, he went and spoke at Northwestern University. He's got pictures of him out by this boat. Not a lot, man. He said that he's even behind on posting on not a blog. Hopefully he's not a blogging because he's a writing. Okay. He needs to be writing Winds of Winter. But the wild cards thing, he's like always working on. So that does not bother me or sort of disturb me, to say the least. House of the Dragon, I'm expecting, right? There was a short little delay. We saw that. It was like a 1 or 2 day COVID delay. But other than that, everything seems to be going on. So probably April-ish.
Okay, good.
Next year, still looking good is where I feel like we're at.
Oh, there was, it was just a rant. I think somebody posted it in our Facebook group. There was some article or something about just some of the actors coming mm-hmm. out and talking a little bit about just what it was like or whatever. There maybe some of their, I don't know if it was time on set or what it was, but there was something to do with the actors. So it's cool that we're getting little bits and pieces of stuff from them just about, you know, the show's going on and it seems like it's going to be pretty cool. Oh no, it was about the, it was Allison Hightower.
Olivia Cook.
Yeah. And she was talking about just what her character type will be. I don't know if it was her or yeah. someone else who was talking.
No,
about.
It is. Yeah, she was. Looks like she was speaking to Collider, and she says, you know, she's very complex, and I think people are going to want to see the worst in her. What's amazing about Game of Thrones, like we saw in the past series, is that one season you hate a character, and the next you absolutely love them, and will go to the ends of the earth for them. She described the making of this show as utterly bizarre. We're in the world of Game of Thrones, but you can also put yourself in a different headspace and know that for an actor, you don't have to necessarily follow on from what anyone else is doing. So sort of like emulating, you know, like she's not going to try and be Lyanna Hedy, Cersei, right? She's mm-hmm. going to sort of be her own character. But at the same time, after the year and a half of 10 years that we've had, looking down and just being like, what am I wearing? What am I doing? This is mad. Okay, so interest. That could not have been her. Yeah, it was. That's weird. Oh, that's weird. She hasn't been there for she hasn't been there for 10 years. The way they phrase that. You know, Collider. I don't trust him.
I don't trust him.
Go ahead and say it. I don't like Collider.
Holy.
Go ahead and say it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we're on, you know, Dork Side of the Forest, you know?
That's true. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, anywho, man, I mean, that's the case. It makes me think that are they done with filming? Or they must have a lot of it done, because she's speaking about it in past tense as if, like, I think you'll like, you know, makes it feel like they got a lot of this done. A lot of it was probably done on a green screen. I think most of King's Landing was a green screen.
Okay. Yeah, that is cool to think that they're further along and they've got a lot of stuff done. Or she's, you know, she's into it enough that she can speak with that type of confidence. So that's cool to know that.
Yeah. So cool. All right. Well, as this is going to be a short chapter here today, it's kind of cool what happens. But kind of a short. Are you drinking beer?
No. Well, it is ginger ale. So, I mean, I guess maybe here in Germany it is alcoholic, because I feel like everything in Germany is alcoholic. That's what they do. They drink beer and pump. That's all they do over here, man. They pump weights and they drink beer.
And they drink beer.
Yeah.
Now, when you drink beer, you don't drink German beer in Germany. You just drink beer, right?
Right.
It's like if you go to France and you ask for toast, do they just serve French, what we would consider French toast every meal?
No, all they're serving in France is French toast. Oh my God. Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering. Like, if I have a Bud Light here, is it a German Bud Light? Is it just all German beer because it's in the country? No, I'm just kidding.
Or is it American? I don't know. Well, yeah,
it's an import, I guess. But no, I've had some German beer here, and it is potent.
Yeah. It's like in Texas, is Texas toast, you know, it's just toast. They just call it, it's just the same thing. It's just Texas toast. So, I mean, you can get a totally different kind of toast just depending on what part of the world you're in.
Right. Yeah, that is actually correct.
It's like I think about a quesadilla. Isn't that just like Mexican grilled cheese? I mean, it's just, you know.
French toast. Dude, that's literally.
Now we got to go to France and find out. You're right there.
I'm right there. I'll swing over.
That's just a hop, skip, and a jump. Yeah.
Yeah. God, that's crazy. Oh, man. The things we're learning on this podcast.
Well, real quick, I know, sorry guys, we're just sort of, you know, rattling on here before we get into the chapter, but I mean, what are the Olympics? You're in another country right now, and the Olympics are going on.
Here's something. Okay, this is really cool, right? So every time we turn on the TV here, it's all from, you know how in the States, like it's every time Team USA, Team USA, right. It's Team Germany, baby. Every single time I'm
watching. How are they even doing?
They're doing okay. I think they're doing okay.
How many medals do they have?
I haven't been keeping track of the medal count. So, but it's just
cool. Well, because I'm over in the United States. Let me tell you, we're crushing it.
Okay? Are we crushing it? Okay.
Yeah, we're crushing it. Yeah.
I feel like I don't know how the United States team is doing as well, because I don't. When you flip on the TV, it's all from the German perspective, and it's all about following.
That's cool. Yeah.
Their heroes, their athletes, and I'm like, wow, this is really
active. Really cool. Active medal tracker right now. Yeah, we're number one with 36. Number two is China. Oh. Number three is the ROC, which is really Russia, but it's like some whole big deal where they're let's see, Germany. I mean, they're not too far down. They got 11 total medals. They got 3 gold, 3 silver, and 5 bronze. They got golds in the women's canoe.
Oh.
Matt,
let me tell you why. Because I'm in Berlin, and there's a river called Spree, but they would say Spree, okay?
Yeah.
And it is this, I probably botched that, but whatever. And all they're doing is kayaking and canoeing down this river, man. They're just, they live on this river.
They also have gold. It looks like they have a gold in the Equestrian Open team and Equestrian Open in or individual. Then they got silvers in judo, equestrian. They got a rowing and then bronze in archery.
Wow. Okay. But gold in canoeing, right?
They get the gold. They got the gold in canoe slalom women's K1.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I'm telling you, I think I know why. I see them out there all every day. It's a common
interesting
thing.
Interesting. I don't think we're going to take the gold in men's basketball this year.
Garbage.
What are we doing?
We need a Space Jam. That's what we need.
We do need a Space Jam. Well, LeBron's the Looney Tunes not there, out there. So, anywho, enough about the Olympics. I mean, you know, there could be some Game of Thrones type events in the Olympics. I mean, we got fencing. I mean, we got sword fighting.
Could you imagine if there was a full on Olympic sort of like tourney situation where in which you were jousting?
Yeah.
Someone else like
speaking of fencing, it does look like the United States women individual foil has the gold in fencing. So
okay, that's good.
So we're crushing it. Anywho, all right, on to somebody who would never win an Olympic gold medal. That is Tyrion. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Tyrion, this chapter Tyrion 14. Tyrion, with Sir Balin Swan and Sir Manon Mor at his side, is cutting through Stannis's forces. He is confused to see such a large force of men to the west, seemingly fighting Stannis's men, and can't figure out where they come from. But he has a little time to consider it as he sees hundreds of Stannis's troops crossing the Blackwater by using the half-sunk ships as a bridge. Racing onto the boats, Tyrion's men are overwhelmed, and he goes over the edge of a gunwale, clinging for his life. Sir Manon Mor appears to tell Tyrion to take his hand, his left hand. As Tyrion reaches for his hand, he instinctively withdraws as Sir Manon's sword slices into his face. Tyrion, grievously wounded, watches as Podrick Payne saves his life by shoving Sir Manon into the river.
Wow. Yeah. This, I kind of jumped the gun. If you look back a week ago, I think it was last week, 2 weeks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I kind of brought up Sir Manon Mor in this whole situation just, a bit early, but, and we'll talk about it more because I just had a random thought here. There was another Kingsguard out there, Sir Balin Swan. What was he doing, Sir Matt? Did he witness any of this? Did he know about it? Was he in on it? It's all a little tricky.
Right. But a lot of these chapters, we're at this point right now in A Clash of Kings where you're towards the end. The Battle of the Blackwater happens in like 10 chapters, but they're short and you're bouncing back and forth. Like we go from like, you know, from Davos gets like his only one chapter. Then it's like Tyrion, Sansa, Tyrion, Sansa. And it just goes back and forth for a bit. Next week will be Sansa again. And so right now we're in Tyrion. So remember last time we were there, he gave his great speech. Hey guys, the Hound was like, I'm out. Right. And the Hound, and we'll see the Hound next week with Sansa. But this time Tyrion's going to go lead the charge. All right.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming into King's Landing.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I mean,
this is our city.
This is our city. Wow, we built this city. Yeah.
We built this city, okay?
Oh, my God. We built this city on Targaryen bodies. Wow.
Wow. Well, not really so much. They built it on... they didn't build it on rock and roll, but they built it on rocks.
Yeah, I was thinking from the Lannister.
We built this city on Blackwater Bay.
There you go.
They did. They built it like right on the
literally bay. Did. They did. Okay.
Right. Somebody do a cover of that. We need it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, he does want to lead this, and you get out there, and it's as you said, it's short, but it the feeling I got from the chapter is it's chaos, man. You go into these things, like we watch movies like The Braveheart, and we watch some of these epic battle scenes, or, you know, my favorite, which is, you know, the when Gondor called for aid, right, and King Théoden rode in there. You know that wasn't as pretty as it was on the screen or as it was written in the book. It was crazy.
absolutely crazy when you charge into all that kind of stuff. So Tyrion, and then him being, you know, just not really battle, I don't know, didn't have a whole lot of experience. He did lead, you know.
He led the Moon Clans in that battle.
He did. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, he did. Yeah. That's his only. I think his only.
He helped fight off. Yeah, he helped fight off some people when he was attacked with. Actually, that might be a show only thing.
What with
With
Catelyn?
Did they get attacked in the books? Dude. Catelyn? I gotta look that up.
Yeah, you look.
I don't think that happens in the books, but it might. Regardless,
either way,
show Tyrion.
Either way, you know what he didn't do? I mean, he did not fight in his own trial by combat, but that's okay. That would not have been a smart call there. That's why we have Bronn, and Bronn is sick. He's leading. He's going out and he's leading this. And I felt like there's just a chaos of battle. And the whole Mandon Moore turn situation where he turns and takes on, he tries to kill Tyrion. That all just happens pretty quick. You know, it's so fast. You turn around, next thing you know, bam, here's this guy coming at you. And Podrick Payne just, I mean, out of nowhere. I feel like he has.
The line, though, about that, too. The summary makes it seem like you actually see this. But really, it's "Be still, my lord, you're hurt bad," a boy's voice. "That makes no sense," Tyrion thought. It sounded almost like Pod.
Yeah.
But at that moment, he actually thinks it's Jaime.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
"There was someone kneeling over him. Jaime," he croaked, almost choking on the blood that filled his mouth. "Who else would save him if not his brother? Be still, my lord." It almost sounded like Pod. Now we do find out it is Podrick, but it's not like we get to see this super, you know, sort of epic
moment.
Because it's all happening. It's all sort of happening, right? And then, you know, and Tyrion's like injured and stuff like that. Yeah, a lot of this is just sort of battle fever. We don't really. There's not really a lot, unfortunately, sort of to take out of this chapter other than George's amazing writing at describing things. I guess that's something, you know, we don't really often talk about. So I think this is probably a good chapter to sort of put this. I mean, this whole Battle of the Blackwater, by the way that George describes it is like, it's amazing because, you know, sometimes he's criticized like this, you know, super nerds, right? Mm-hmm. Even beyond Ezra and myself are like, well, George is always describing food. Like he always takes a second to describe the food. It's like, that's not something I notice until people point it out. But some of this here, right? "Wedge," Tyrion commanded as his men streamed out of the sally port. They formed up in spearhead with him at the point. Sir Mandon Moore took the place to his right, flames shimmering against the white enamel of his armor, his dead eyes shining passionately through his helm. He rode a coal black horse barded in all white, with the pure white shield of the Kingsguard strapped to his arm. On the left, Tyrion was surprised to see Podrick Payne, a sword in his hand. "You're too young," he said at once. "Go back. I'm your squire, my lord." Which is awesome because it comes back at the end. Let's go. "Tyrion could spare no time for argument with me then. Stay close." He kicked his horse into motion. They rode knee to knee, following the line of the looming walls. Joffrey's standard streamed crimson and gold from Sir Mandon's staff, Stagon lying dancing hoof to paw. They went from a walk to a trot, wheeling wide around the base of the tower. Arrows darted from the city walls while stones spun and tumbled overhead, crashing down blindly onto earth and water, steel and flesh. Ahead loomed the King's Gate and a surging mob of soldiers wrestling with a huge ram and a shaft of black oak with an iron head. Archers off the ships surrounded them, loosening their shafts at whatever defenders showed themselves on the gatehouse walls. "Lances," Tyrion commanded. He sped to a canter. And then he goes on. And we don't really spend a lot of time talking sort of about George's writing style, except because we're always so deep into like, well, this one line and, you know, what's that have to do with this bigger theory. But I mean, the way he's describing this here, I mean, it deserves some admiration and praise because it's amazing. I mean, so often in big battles, the authors aren't, they don't get like sort of that intricate. I mean, stuff, and it just sort of flows to me so well. I mean, a shaft of black oak with an iron head is in here, but it's, you know, it's like, okay, did I need that? No, but it's so quick. And it just adds that tiny little bit more description where I don't feel it's overwhelming. I mean, you and I as read another author, another big fantasy author, Robert Jordan, where his criticism is that he over describes things, right? Where I think that George here, in describing that quick little scene of there's chaos going on, Tyrion's riding, he's looking around, this is what he's seeing, and we get all these tiny little details in there that I think just works so well and it flows so well.
Yeah, what's interesting is a lot of time in conversations, if it's just Daenerys walking through a city or one of our main characters walking by something, he might describe a weirwood tree or a temple or whatever. And it's added detail that actually really does matter. And I'm not saying the details in this chapter don't matter. What they do in this chapter, though, is different than like cueing in like a foreshadowing piece or something. In this chapter, it's really just to create a feeling, like a mood in the reader where you are, I mean, everything that, like, there's words like sudden. Like, he uses the word sudden several times, right? Where it's things are happening suddenly. And it's to create urgency and battle and chaos and all that kind of stuff. So that's really cool that he does do that. And you're right. It is short and consistent. And it doesn't even feel out of place. It doesn't feel odd. It's not like when you go to the chapters where you're having long-winded conversations sitting down and they're all happening inside of one little room. Like, you know, like at the small council, sometimes things are described. And it could be describing someone's, you know, a maester's chain or whatever. He still throws those little tiny details in there, and it doesn't feel overwhelming like some other authors who will spend, you know, numerous amounts of words just to describe something, and you think, okay, do we need all of, and is there a purpose to it? See, with George, there's always a purpose to what he's putting in his stories, and not just to paint the picture. Sometimes they're just writing to paint a better picture and give you a good view of the room, but George is doing it for really good reasons. Okay, so one of my thoughts in this was, like, I never really, when you stop and you read just the nitty-gritty of this, like, these knights are yielding left and right, right? People are out here just yielding, and I guess I wouldn't have thought of that. I normally, when I think of battle, I think, I mean, yes, there are people who surrender and they're beaten or whatever, but they kind of look around and saw the chaos. It almost makes me think sort of what he's saying about knights here and what he says later on is they rush into this battle and really it was just for honor, honor's sake. Yeah. And to then just to say, I was there, I fought in this yield. They're yielding instantly, some of them. You know, a little bit of battle, bloodlust, and then that's it. And it's just cool to me, and it's an extra layer that originally you read it and it's not a huge deal, but it's... Yeah,
you know, oddly enough, this is crazy. And again, I think the way to sort of contextualize this chapter and this batch of chapters is sort of together, because again, we start off and we don't see this is why, again, I think Winds of Winter is taking so long, because how do you tell some of these events that may go down the line of the show? Who do you pick to tell them? Because it's so important. We start with Davos, right? We start with Davos, and it seems like we've lost.
Yeah.
But we're now three chapters past that, and we go from Tyrion to Sansa back to Tyrion, and the only thing it feels like is, no, we've lost. And then we go to Sansa the next chapter, and again, we'll see it through the eyes of her in the next chapter, where they think they've lost, but you suddenly start to hear, well, it sounds like there's other banners, and so it's kind of weird, and it's like, oh, okay. And so he, you know, again, the show, and also having read past this to sort of know a little bit more about Stannis, and sort of, you know, to get more like POVs with Melisandre and Davos and stuff like that later after he loses this battle. But if you were reading this for the first time, you know, we don't really see Stannis in the first book. You sort of hear about him. We start, the first chapter is with Stannis in this, And up to this point, all we've really seen Stannis do outside of Davos saying he's a good man is do a ceremony on the beach in which they kill a maester, right? His mm-hmm. his new sort of fire witch, sorceress. They kill a maester with poison, right? And she drinks it and it's fine. Then he kills his brother and now he's going into this battle. And so I think we're sort of tainted, I guess, by the idea of knowing what happens. But yeah, reading this for the first time, you might be thinking Stannis is gonna get in here and murder everyone because he's not as good of a guy as we think he'll be. You know, sort of our perception of Stannis will change a little bit to where a lot of people really like him. I think, you know, you and I are on Team Stannis later. But
yeah,
if you were reading this for the first time, I think you'd, without having seen the show or anything, I think right now you'd be like, Stannis is like the real deal.
Well, yeah, for sure. And that's the other thing too, is there's George puts you in a spot where it's like, okay, I'm cool if Stannis wins, but also don't kill Tyrion, you know, or like, let's let Sansa out of there. He's got us leaning into that so much. We're like, okay, there's got to be a way where in which Tyrion makes it out, Sansa makes it, and but yet Stannis wins. And that's not at all what happens. Stannis does not win, right? Tyrion and Sansa are safe. He gives you two out of the three. The one that you thought you were going to get, nope, you're not going to get that one, but you will get the other two. And that's sort of, I guess if you had those points where you have your favorites, you have your characters that you are following, that you like, that you enjoy, and you're leaning into good outcomes from them, be ready for like a two out of three those. So
yeah, you know, the other thing that's really interesting is really all of our sort of main characters all survive this battle. Mm-hmm. Davos survives it. Sansa survives it. Tyrion survives it. Even the Hound, Cersei and Joffrey sort of all survive it. But really, with the exception of Joffrey, I think everybody comes out of this worse for wear than they were before. None of them die, but Davos is now, you know, because, right, his son, you know, like his son goes with him. He dies. He's going to sort of challenge Melisandre. That turns into he's going to get thrown in jail, right? He's going to get sort of imprisoned there for a little bit. Sansa has her situation with the Hound. And then she's going to come out of this no longer betrothed to Joffrey. Now she's betrothed to Tyrion. Tyrion comes out of this with his face, you know, cut. Stannis comes out of this having lost. I mean, it's nobody mm-hmm. really wins. Nobody really wins this here.
Yeah, then there's the theme, right? Is that sometimes in war, really, who does win? I mean, who wins in these great wars? It seems like this power struggle goes on, and all right, we're about where we left it before. It's just. I mean, really, I guess they do, right? I mean, they hold the city. Tywin and everyone makes it down, and we're good to go. But yeah, sometimes you look at it and you go, what the heck was the point of all of this, and did it matter? I mean, I know there is a greater point. I mean, Joffrey is a freaking, he's an air quote bastard, and Stannis is the rightful king. Okay, so we got to get him in there. I don't know when you want to talk about this, but I wanted to bring this up real quick. Sir Baelin Swan. Okay, mm-hmm. I want to bring up just a little bit on him in this. So Tyrion, when he's charging into this battle, he's got Sir Mandon Mor on one side and he's got Sir Baelin on the other. These are the Kingsguard wearing white, and they're battle commanders. They're awesome. They're epic. He's got Sir Mandon Mor, keeps looking, seeing him there. At one point, he does turn, thinking to find him there beside him, and it is a different white knight. It's Sir Baelin, who wore the same armor, but his horse trappings bore the battling black and white swans of his house. Now, think about that. Battling black and white swans of his house. So this line right here, if you're looking for like theories and you're looking for things that could happen in the future, a battle between inside of House Swan is something that, that could happen. Just like we had the Foss Away bad apples, right? You've got the red and green apples and picking different size sides. Right now, Sir Balin Swan is fighting his brother. Is I think his name is Donal. Donal Swan is on the opposite side. He first joined up with Renly, then he went over to Stannis, and now Donal Swan is on the other side, and I forget who it is that he's ransomed to, but he does yield. He yields, and later on, Jaime, this is to flash forward and make connections for everyone, when Jaime comes back to be commander of the Kingsguard, he asks Sir Balin about this. And actually, even right now, before the battle, I think they're asking Sir Balin about the if he meets his brother on the field, what would he do type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of cool, which is a little connection.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I'm with you, too. The both of these guys, Balin Swan and Manon Moore, right? So because that's sort of right where we're at now is he's gonna basically attack Tyrion. This whole chapter, though, every time they describe him, George makes it a point to sort of use the word white, right? Like we think of white armor, spotless armor, like they're pure, they're Kingsguard. And then ultimately he's going to get betrayed by one Sir Mandon Moore here. So that's sort of kind of some interesting writing too, to try to, that's what George does. He'll start leaning you in this idea of, oh, like Sir Mandon Moore, Tyrion looks at him and saying he's riding ahead, just like cut mowing through people. And you're thinking, okay, we've got this. And then, wow, out of nowhere, Tyrion is betrayed and attacked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is where I kind of wondered about. So later on, Tyrion, in Tyrion's trial, I bring up Sir Balin because he's out there on the battlefield. Did anyone else see this? Was anyone else nearby to kind of witness this and talk about it? Because he wants to kind of keep it secret because he thinks his life is in danger later on. And he doesn't want whoever it is that was plotting to kill him, he doesn't want them to be informed that he's on to them. And hopefully that person who hired Sir Mandon Moore just thinks it didn't work and Sir Mandon was killed in the battlefield, killed in the line of duty, and that Tyrion is no more wiser about this plot against him. But I kind of thought, did someone else like a Kingsguard member out there see something that went down? And I say that because Sir Balin later on in the in Tyrion's trial, when he testifies, whether he killed Joffrey with the poisoning, Sir Balin's like one of the people who says, I doubt it. But he did strike the king. He did smack the king and hit him at one point. And Oberyn says, you know, he's kind of scolds Sir Balin. He said in the days of old, like, you would have taken someone's hand for that. You strike the king, your hand is gone. And he happens to be the king's hand at the time. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, so it's why I thought about him a little bit more as we get to that point where Podrick, you know, punches in there, right, and does his thing.
So another thing, this is another area in which we talked about this in the last Tyrion, where a lot of fans have questioned the story, right? Because George tells it through a POV point of view. And so Tyrion felt drunk, the battle fever. He had never thought to experience it himself, though Jaime had told him of it often enough. How time seemed to blur and slow and even stop. How the past and the future vanished until there was nothing but the instant. How fear fled and thought fled, and even your body. You don't feel your wounds or the ache in your back or the weight of the armor. He goes on for a little bit. But then immediately following him talking about how he has the battle fever, and he, you know, some of his thoughts might not even be his own. He says, they tried, let them kill me if they can. They tried. Another spearman ran at him. Tyrion lopped off the head of his spear, then his hand, then his arm, trotting around him in a circle. An archer, bowless, thrust at him with an arrow, holding it as if it were a knife. The Destria kicked the man's thigh to send him sprawling, and Tyrion barked laughter. He rode past a banner painted in the mud, one of Stannis' fiery hearts, and chopped the staff in two with a swing of his axe. A knight rose up from nowhere to hack at his shield with a two-handed greatsword again and again until someone thrust a dagger under his arm, one of Tyrion's men, perhaps. Right, then the guy's yielding and stuff like that. So It has been sort of theorized here that some of what Tyrion's saying in this battle, given the, you know, fact that Tyrion, one is an, you know, is an imp, right? Mm-hmm. And the other is that you're talking here about, he describes them as knights, sort of trained knights and trained archers that he's mowing down. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Immediately following a line in which Tyrion is saying, like, the battle fever, you know, you can't tell whether it's, you know, you get these sort of tall tales. So some people have sort of questioned online and some, like, you know, a Song of Ice and Fire wiki and Reddit and stuff, exactly, like, if it's not Tyrion sort of boasting this up to be a little bit more than it is, given his probably lack of training compared to other people. And yeah. And it's so yeah, I mean, you know, it's always, well, how big was the fish you caught? You know, well, yeah, you know, it's bigger, yeah, bigger.
It's almost like you could see anybody who's watched Lord of the Rings or has read Lord of the Rings, you have Gimli out there, right? Just wheeling this. You almost, Tyrion makes himself out to seem like for a hot second there, he was Gimli and he was out there just slaying orcs and just going crazy. And really, you know, it's the child version of that perhaps. And he's getting knocked around. Right. And he has no idea.
I mean, I'm not saying he didn't
give him credit.
Kill these people, but another spearman ran at him. He lopped the head off his spear, then his hand, then his arm. And then, you know, I mean, that's not an easy thing to do.
No, I mean, it's not.
I mean, you would have a spear is coming at you and you're going to swing, hit the spear, take it off, and then cut off the guy's hand and then cut off the guy's arm.
Right. But,
you know, and how big are Tyrion's arms? How big is that axe? How much force does Tyrion have swinging that axe? I mean, there's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll just go ahead and say this, Matt, his legs, they cramp up all the time, just like my legs sometimes. And I'm telling you now that stuff hurts. Okay. And you really can't do a whole lot with it. So I don't know if that's true. But think about this. What if that knight is like hit and falling down and he's like pretty much dead? He's got a sword in his back maybe. And he, right. As he's coming down, Tyrion's just like hack, whack, hack. And he just,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the guy gets shot in the back and then he's falling on you and you stab him. And then it's kind of like, okay, well, yeah.
right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just something to keep in mind because George has said in interviews, especially when talking about Bran, that, you know, you need to sort of think about the narrator a little bit, that he's you know, and so this might be specifically a chapter in which we can sort of question a little bit, and that, you know, and that last one too, like Tyrion describes his horse as a stallion, right? Is it a stallion or is it a pony? And so
yeah, I like it. Okay. Yeah, so I know we sometimes get harped on a little bit for doing this, but I do appreciate that the show did what the show did with Podrick Payne and getting to see this moment, because I think it is really, really cool. And you're right, it is sort of a dreamy coming back. Pod saves him. He's his squire. But it's cool in the show how he's right there. I mean, right?
So they do it a little bit different. In the book, he sort of shoves him into the water. In the show, he stabs him in the back with like a spear and like the guy's in his neck. So cool. Just, you know, that's just another sort of way to do it. But so again, a sort of cool chapter. It's a short chapter. We're into a handful of these sort of short chapters. Sir Manon Mor tries to betray him. And then Podrick shoves him into the water. Although at this point we don't actually know it's Pod. We sort of think it is. It's a boy's voice. Tyrion thought it sounded almost like Pod. So technically it could be somebody else. Yeah, if you were reading this for the first time, but it's pretty much Podrick.
Right. Hey, before we go into like a Mance Rayder thing, I want, as you look up something, let me read to folks what I think is a really good Sir Balin Swan theory. And let me just first pitch my thoughts on this, because this is always what happens. I think about a character, and as I go back and I read and I research on them, I think about their nature and what they might do in Winds of Winter and all that kind of stuff. So
Sir Balin Swan is a character who you didn't choose him as a member of the King's Guard to kill Tyrion, right? They didn't pick him. They picked Sir Mandon Moore for a reason. And it goes back to Bronn. It goes back to the connections to the Vale, Littlefinger, all that kind of stuff. But Sir Balin is portrayed as this honorable knight, and possibly, like, you know, his brother seemingly is a less honorable version of House Swan. You've got the black and the white of that, you know, house. So he's doing really, really well. And as I said, he doesn't throw Tyrion under the bus during this whole trial where Tyrion, we know it's a complete, just Cersei's sending folks in there to say whatever they want to say. He comes in, he's honorable. Oberyn Martell will see that in him. Jaime sees it in him. People see him as an honorable white knight, worthy of the cloak, and someone who kind of reminds Jaime, like when Jaime thinks about the Kingsguard of old, like Balin could fit in that. Balin kind of still is that type of character. Now, later on in the series, Cersei sends Sir Balin Swan back to retrieve Myrcella. And this is, we've talked about this Dark Star thing, Dark Star versus Sir Balin Swan and what may happen. So instead of reading the whole thing to you guys, I guess I'm just going to kind of point out some of the talking points of this theory. And it's essentially that he has been tasked to go down to Dorne and retrieve Myrcella. Myrcella has been attacked. Her ear has been cut. And she is, Aerys Okart has been killed, right? He's been killed. And it all comes down to the Sand Snakes are trying to push her as the new queen, to make a claim for her over Tommen when Joffrey is killed. Cersei has sent Balin down on this mission, and she's sent him on a secret mission, not just to go check on Myrcella or whatever, but to actually bring her back. And it's more devious than that. According to Doran Martell, there's a plot to kill Trystane, and they're actually going to try to bring Myrcella back. There's going to be an ambush, and I think it's Cersei's way of thinking, like, there needs to be something that she can say to Doran Martell or to the Martells that, like, I can't keep my daughter down there. It's unsafe. People are getting ambushed. Your own son was ambushed by people yelling half-man, and they rush out and they kill people. Sir Balin's not cool with this, Matt. He's not necessarily, I don't think he's entirely on board, but, like, there's no one left, really. You've got all the Lannisters being killed. He doesn't really have, he's got Cersei's there, and she's in charge telling him what to do. Like, he takes great pride in protecting Tommen and protecting the king. He says that he's sorry to Jaime about, like, not protecting Joffrey. He takes his duty seriously. So he's now been given orders that put him in a position of dishonor. The queen regent is having him go down there and do something dishonorable. So he's going to, like, what's he going to do? The big question is, what is Sir Balin Swan going to do? He's also, I think, from Dorne. I think you can look this up for me. I think House Swan is from that region. So I think Dorne probably wants to cut him a little bit of slack, maybe, and maybe give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, he does not want to, he suggests that they return Myrcella by sea, and Balin refuses to do that, saying it's too dangerous, and he wants to take her by road. So that tips off Doran to almost say, yeah, he's in on some plot. There's something wrong here. I wouldn't be surprised, Sir Matt, if Sir Balin on the side had informed Dorne that there's something dishonorable happening. You know what I mean? And that because he goes to fight Darkstar on, like, it's the honorable thing to do. You attack the royal family. You attack Princess Myrcella. They're leading him to Gerald Dayne for a fight. And I right. just kind of... So the big theory on this, just to get to the too long didn't read section of this, is that Sir Balin Swan is an honorable man, and he will defect to Aegon, young Griff, instead of going through with his orders to kill Trystane. And I thought that was interesting, because I was just like, okay, like, he's being led down to this duel and this battle.
he may figure out that he's been played by Cersei, and that may really upset him, and it may be something that he seems is dishonorable. And we always talk about like who would be in Young Griff's Kingsguard and who would be someone who would switch over sides. People have talked about Gerald Dayne being the Darkstar being in his Kingsguard. Well, not if he's dead, not if Balon Swan kills him, and right. he's there to kind of shift over. So I thought that was cool. Just like a connection to this chapter and White Cloaks and in that character.
Yeah, and so they are. House Swan is from Stonehelm, which is technically in the Stormlands, but
I'm trying
to very quickly pull up. There's a map I really, really, really like. It's that one. You guys should absolutely try to find this map too, if you can ever get your hands on it. It's the one that somebody did. It's like a super big file. And it's that one where it's like, it almost looks like an old, like, I don't know, but it's got all of the houses on it.
Oh, okay.
You'll notice it, but it's like almost like cartoony, like storybook drawn. Mm-hmm. It's like a hand drawn entire thing of Westeros map. And it's an enormous, it's like a 4K file. But anyway, this is the one exactly that I was looking for here. So, Stonehelm is the Stormlands, right? Sort of curves around and it's in the Sea of Dorne, like it touches the Sea of Dorne. So it's technically in the Stormlands, but it's like, it's right there in the Sea of Dorne. So it's actually the Dornish marches come up past it into the Stormlands technically.
Yeah. So, okay, that's a really good point. So here's something interesting. So his father, Lord Swan, owes his fealty to Storm's Inn, yet has kept his levies at home throughout the War of the Five Kings. His men are fresh, trained, and ready, whereas many other houses have been depleted. Likely this is justified by the two Dornish armies in the Boneway and the Prince's Pass. Mm-hmm. So he's really close to that, right? But the Swan's yep. levies could be raised if those armies marched out on behalf of Aegon. Sir Balin, meanwhile, yeah. Okay, cool. So, let's see. Oh my gosh.
So he's actually, Stonehelm is like next door to Blackhaven, which is, your favorite character.
Beric Dondarrion.
Beric Dondarrion, yes. Yep. House Dondarrion.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So he's actually his father's, you know, like he's there, like he may be put in a situation where it's like a position between family, and he's already been opposed and on the opposite side of fighting his brother. And now if that Boneway army were to join up with House Swan, if House Swan sends a fresh set of, you know, levies and men and to this Dornish army that is right there in the Boneway that Aegon may be leading. Like, according to the Arianna chapters, he's already meeting Mace Tyrell, on the field. So maybe there is a situation where Balon joins up with that group and says it's time to switch over. This Redditor goes on to kind of say there have been Kingsguard who have switched sides. And I mean, one of the most honorable is Sir Barristan Selmy. He's been kicked out of the Kingsguard, right? Now he's joined up with Daenerys. And, you know, if you put a Kingsguard member in that position, Balin may think, like, I have been duped a little bit. And it's not his fault, but he's been put in a situation where he's asked to do something super dishonorable and wrong. And he's not the type of guy who would do that. I think it's John Connington is telling young Griff when he's thinking about Duck to be in his Kingsguard, he's sort of like, that guy's not the type of guy we need in our Kingsguard. And there's allusions and references to someone like Sir Balin Swan. What he calls a good Kingsguard member is someone who's true and solid. And Sir Balin is often described as that. So,
yeah,
just kind of cool, you know? I mean, just an interesting
absolutely.
Thought on Sir Balin Swan.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, as well, let's move into, I guess it was just a raven saying, hey, will you guys do something on Mance? And so, yeah, you know, actually, I can't remember if we briefly talked about this. I can't remember if it was on the last episode we did or if it was just you and I talking outside of this, but we'll talk a little bit about one of the most common theories surrounding Mance Rayder, which is the Mance Rayder is possibly Rhaegar Targaryen theory. And there's tons of evidence to support this. We've been over this quite a lot. Mance gets glamored, which would tie into Rhaegar, who dies at the Ruby Ford. He has rubies, right? It's pretty common. We've discussed it before. But one of the things we have not discussed that could sort of really challenge that theory, buck against it a bit, or blow it wide open into like super tinfoil land that we really need to discuss and think about. Is the fact that, let's, for sake of argument, let's assume that Mance Rayder is 100% Rhaegar Targaryen, hiding the whole deal is Rhaegar Targaryen. You know, that would make him sort of Jon's trainer, also secretly his dad. You can have other white, you know, other Kingsguard members up there with Tormund, right? Could be, you know, Osmond Went or, you know, whatever. However you want to go the other way. Well, if you do go down that route, then you sort of have to look at something because Mance Rayder has a wife, Dala, and they have a son, Aemon Steelstrong, right? There's like a baby swap and all this stuff. And this is something that a lot of people don't talk about when they talk about that whole Mance is Rhaegar theory. Well, for that theory to sort of work, that means that this could be a head of the dragon. This is another Targaryen bastard son, or is a legitimate Targaryen if Dala is called his wife, whether it's a sort of wildling wife, you know, or whatever. I mean, by the wildling customs, they would be married and all this stuff. So that would make him a legitimate Targaryen in a way, right?
Yeah, so and it, like you said, if you take it at, let's say that truly is Rhaegar and there's no question about it or whatever, then yeah, then he has a claim to the throne and he has children, right? And you have this whole, because that's the whole pitch for young Griff. Young Griff is supposed to be his child, and people call him Fagon, whatever, you know, he's freaking Aegon, man. He's the guy. Mm-hmm. He's coming back. And it's through his father Rhaegar that he's going to be able to claim the throne. So Aemon Steel's song would be able to make a similar claim later on, I guess, in life. He's would be a little, like a little 2-year-old baby right now, but it is kind of a wild thing to think about. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for that to happen though, you know, I mean, think about some of the things, right? We thought with the show as that the baby, Craster's baby, right? Because remember, that was like a big deal, right? Is we saw the Night King in the show, right? And the wildlings turning these babies and stuff like that. Well, he didn't get one. And one of the big theories we had, like a lot of people consistently had going into season 8, was there's something going on with this baby, right? Like he wanted this baby. He wanted to turn it and all of this stuff. Now, in the books, there's a baby swap, and that in itself is something that is, we don't really talk about a lot. It's not something that gets brought up a lot in the Reddit and stuff like that. But even outside of the Mance's Rhaegar sort of theory, that's kind of an important thing that they did this swap of this baby and what's going to happen there. And then if you proceed to go down the Mance is Rhaegar thing, Sam could have the son of Rhaegar Targaryen and could learn that Jon might actually be his brother, this baby's brother. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with this.
Yeah, this
they
is,
name
this
is... him after a Targaryen, Aemon Steelstrong. I mean,
I know.
There's a lot there.
Yeah, there is. So the crazy thing is, and you're right, the baby swap is a big deal. That's a big indication that there's something, there's a connection to this and everything that happened with young Griff and Elia's children and basically Lyanna and Rhaegar, right? The whole, it's all kind of a mystery. A lot of people think, and I was just reading someone on Reddit, one of their comments was the idea that you would do something like this. You make parallels between Mance and Rhaegar, And then you show the baby swapping to help us, like, to ease the reader into accepting young Griff. So those people who believe in Fagon and believe that he's fake and he's false or whatever, like, you start to think maybe it's real. Maybe he really is, like, Varys did do something, and we start to believe in this secrecy plot because, well, look, Jon Snow did it. I mean, he snuck a baby out, like, right underneath Melisandre and Stannis. Like, this happens. So you almost do that to lull the reader into thinking and looking for things like that. So it could be kind of it's a false trail, or it's legit, and there's actually, you know, Mance is really Rhaegar, and he was able, above all things, Rhaegar was considered to be able, my friend, as right. in, like, yes. you know, Bale, able, the whole situation, right. Yeah.
Right. And so, and it's just interesting to think too, if we do go down that route, and he is, if you don't go down that route, then I think there's still something about these kids, that there's these two boys, these two babies that were swapped, and what's going to be the important. Now, remember, it could be, well, because Rhaegar's child has king's blood, because he's the king beyond the wall, mm-hmm. or excuse me, Mance's child has king's blood, because he's king beyond the wall. Could definitely also be, if he's Rhaegar,
yeah,
you want to get serious and technical about things. So it's not something people talk about on the Reddit and stuff, and so it's just like, well, I mean, what do we think is ultimately gonna happen with these kids? Are they going to get swapped back at some point? Is Gilly going to get her actual child back?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Mance might be dead. Technically, he could be dead. I mean, the pink letter says he's dead. I don't think so, but
yeah.
Could be. So where do we go from there?
Right. Yeah, I know. That's the big, you always say it, I say it. That's why Winds of Winter takes so long, because there's so many different threads and plots and things to kind of unravel and to get to. But where do you get, see, this is the other thing too, is with the babies, it's sort of like, how significant can they be? Because this story is ultimately around, like, adults and children. I mean, I just don't know that, like, in the end of this, I mean, I could still see in the end of this, like, someone, a child comes out, and there's this child to be with another regent, where, you know, Tyrion or Bran or someone is, you know, a regent of some kind, or a king, or Jon Snow's watching over an infant baby, his baby brother. Who freaking knows? I mean,
if Rickon dies, maybe the same way we see it, and then Bran also dies, and then it's like, well, we still go down some route in which Jon ends up, like, you know, living beyond the wall, maybe now with his actual brother or something. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just so weird, because like
it's like, well, I don't know. Yeah,
you'd almost rather not have the show like endpoints in your mind, because they could be, and if people believe this, they believe they're very far off,
very, very different,
and they can start to delude things, which is why we need Winds of Winter so bad, to see which direction, you know, George is taking this, which way the threads are going, and if they look like they're going way different than the show. Well, then now that adds to our speculation and our theorizing, and it's cool. But
this is why it's taking so long, because there's characters like this.
Oh yeah, I mean,
and you have to have a plan, because it's like, well, where are we even going? I mean,
does he have a plan? I think I have read multiple times George just basically says, like, it grows on me, like the reading, the writing, the characters evolve and they grow, which is cool, but like. His story is growing. There are vines upon vines upon. You can't even see. It's just so far.
And a character like Aemon Steelstrong, because in order for Aemon Steelstrong to be sort of important, right?
Mm-hmm.
He, one, needs to be a lot older, or two, needs to, like, be the son of Rhaegar Targaryen, and if that happens.
Yeah, why does he matter?
You already have had to have so much other stuff.
Why does he matter? Is he just some tool for negotiating? And that's what George does.
Unless you go down this route of, I mean, as a scenario I can see is Mance is Rhaegar. Young Griff because I still am sort of a believer of what we saw with in the show of Jorah Mormont getting cured by Sam at the Citadel. I think that's going to happen to
John Connington.
Yeah. Well, maybe young Griff does die or something. And then, hey, this is, we find out that Mance is Rhaegar and this is his actual son.
And John Connington takes over there. Know, but, yeah.
And then we don't know that John is until later, or maybe N plus A equals J. And then you go down, then you have that double whammy and then it's none of it makes sense. And I don't know, but Daenerys wins.
We've wove ourselves into our own web and we don't even know how we got here. Yeah, right. This is crazy. That's wild. Yeah, I can't even comprehend all that right now.
There's no way he's finishing in 2 books. There's
no freaking way.
There's no
way. Remember when we started this podcast and I said I know. I was like, there's just no freaking way. God.
There's too much, especially with his writing style. So
yeah.
All right, guys. Well, hey, that is it for us this week. As you have anything else before we close up shop here?
No, yeah, I would just say folks keep checking in for the video version. I'm gonna be setting up a shop over here in a different I'm still in Germany, but I'll be moving locations and you know, you just kinda keep track of where I'm at. I'm in being a new spot and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm having fun over here. I hope you guys are having a good time and the summer's going well for everybody. We'll be back next week. Kind of getting used to, Matt and I are still getting used to some of the I don't have all my equipment.
Time zone. Right.
Either, too. So, you know, I have a sock in my hand.
Time zone differences. It's 10 p.m. my time, which is like 2 hours past my bedtime.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah. But, and then Sunday, which is your Monday, and
then we'll figure out a nice like a Friday or Saturday, guys. We'll throw a Bannerman hangout, and I'll do it from the freaking balcony out here, European style, baby. Okay, I'll bring my German beer.
We've had people from Australia, we've had people from Canada, we've had people from
Ireland,
United Kingdom, and Ireland.
By the way, Lady Becky, would Ireland be European style? Technically,
it's part of Europe.
Right?
Technically, like, a little bit of Russia is like part of Europe.
She's gonna be like, "How dare what?" She's like, "Have I got?" Yeah, exactly. It is. Yeah. At least, she's like, "How have I not gotten through to these guys?" Sorry.
I don't know.
It's my first time over here.
Absolutely. So, all right, guys. Hey, well, with that, guys. Yeah, nothing else. So anyway, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 62, Sansa 7 of A Clash of Kings.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.